Thanks for listening to the latest Football Digest podcast, available on all podcast platforms. Subscribe now through Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Acast, or wherever you get your podcasts from, so you don't miss a single episode.
Hello and welcome along to the latest edition of the Football Digest podcast. My name is Ned Keating. I'm joined today by John Cross as we run the rule over what was a fairly hectic weekend. John, we had the Premier League, we had the FA Cup, and it's the FA Cup that we are going to start with first. And we're recording this Monday morning, so about kind of, you know, close to 12 hours, just over 12 hours after Manchester United squeaked through against Coventry City on penalties in the end. And after 71 minutes, if you told anyone that Man United needed penalties to progress, they would have laughed at you. 3-0 up, looking very comfortable, and somehow very fortunate not to throw it all away. Coventry City coming back to draw 3-3 with a late penalty in normal time to take the game into extra time. In extra time, VAR, which we'll talk about a little bit in a second as well, denying them a late winner in extra time too, and on penalties. After the game, Erik ten Hag was kind of questioned. I think in multiple interviews, he was asked whether or not it was an embarrassment for Manchester United, given the position that they were in. And ten Hag came out and instead said, no, it's an achievement. We're in back-to-back FA Cup finals. It's great to do it 2 years in a row. And he might be true in that respect. The statement, you know, fair play United, two FA Cup finals in a row, deserve, you know, credit there. But sometimes it's the journey, isn't it, John? And how you end up getting there. And quite frankly, it was an embarrassment for Manchester United, wasn't it?
It really was. I did think Erik ten Hag would be a little bit ashen-faced, a little bit more downbeat than he was. I mean, it was my colleague in the main press conference, Dave McDonald, that basically asked him about, you know, is it an embarrassment? And, you know, he really riled up at that question. But it's a question that Man United fans want asking, and, you know, and Dave really was on top of that and has got the barometer of United fans. So, you know, it's a question definitely that needed to ask. And I just found Ten Hag's attitude afterwards quite, listen, he's obviously going to be on the defensive. But, he was all over the place in his answers. And I think as soon as a manager begins to go all over the place, meander into different territories about excuses here and there, even brought up their game at Arsenal, it was back in September, you know, as basically created a chance we could have gone ahead in that game. I'm thinking, Eric, you didn't. And it's a game that's gone. And how many months ago is that? It's, well, 8 months ago, it's just, it's just seemed crazy to me. And very, very bizarre. But I guess that plays into the confused, you know, sort of mind that is Ten Hag at the moment. I like Ten Hag, and I think he's done a decent job over 2 years. I think the second year has been punctuated by so many issues off the pitch that I think if you were being fair to him, then I think you'd say injuries have been bad, but hang on a minute, so have everyone else have. But it's more the off-the-field distractions about a protracted takeover. You know, sort of, is he coming or going? The uncertainty around his future, the uncertainty around the club's future. I think in all of that, to reach a Wembley final is no mean achievement. But when you play like that, you've got to admit that you got lucky, because basically at 3-0, the journalist in me thinks, I'd love a story here, but we've not got one. And with 20 minutes to go, it was just a complete non-event. And then Coventry, as soon as they get one goal, you think they couldn't, could they? And I was trying to sort of say in my match report today, that is the state of Manchester United, that as soon as it goes to 3-1, you're thinking, oh, here we go. And I'm sorry, but what are the top club when you were still got a two-goal advantage over a championship team? Would you think they could collapse here? Well, that is the worst possible indictment you could have of a Ten Hag team. That they, sure enough, they did collapse. You know, Casemiro just couldn't run. He just looked to me, you know, a player that's edging towards retirement or the MLS, frankly. And then Marcus Rashford, his body language was so negative. That is a guy who's just lost complete enjoyment of playing football. And there's so many things wrong, I thought, with United's performance, really. But they were completely highlighted, I think, in the last 20 minutes. And the way that they collapsed, the way that it was a near embarrassment, you know, and United fans are brilliantly passionate. But at the end, it was so noticeable that at the Coventry end, it was all blue flags. At the United end, you know, it was about two-thirds red seats. The other third was filled with with United fans. I tell you what, United fans, I'm sorry, I don't agree with this kind of populist opinion to not supporters. They're brilliant supporters. You know, they pay a lot of money. They follow their team. They get behind their team. United fans were loud yesterday, but they'd had enough. You know, I'm not having a go at United fans by leaving at the end. I just think that's a reflection of how they feel about their team, about how they feel with their manager. It just cannot go on, Ned. Honestly, that's the point for me. Ten Hag is running out of time. It's not working for him. I've got some sympathy because of the circumstance with him, but you need a change. You know, if he'd had his first season, this season, if you like, you'd say, okay, give him a chance. But I just can't see in any way that that can happen because, frankly, Sir Jim Ratcliffe, you know, who'd run the marathon in the morning and basically appeared at Wembley just after half time. If he wants to make himself popular, and he does need to make himself a bit more popular, then he's got to change managers and get a more dynamic sort of kind of bigger name, more popular name, if you like, amongst United fans in.
And of course, you can read, not only John's opinion on it there, giving the kind of his thoughts on the future of Erik ten Hag, but of course the other Mirror Football journalists as well. That is the Mirror Football Big Debate this Monday as well, and you can read that on the website too. John, as I said there, though, I mean, VAR sparing ultimately Manchester United's blushes as well. Hadji Wright ruled as offside in the build-up to what Coventry thought was a brilliant winner, and the scenes as well that you saw afterwards, the joy and the jubilation amongst the Coventry players, the fans, and a lot of people taking issue with VAR over, that's why it was brought in, being very sarcastic, being glib about it and saying, you know, kind of we've been robbed of those moments. What a moment it was for Coventry fans. But ultimately, Hadji Wright was offside, wasn't he, John? And it came to, no matter, taking all the emotion away from it and everything that it might mean, frankly, the right decision was reached, and that's what we should be celebrating here. We shouldn't be criticising VAR because it ruled and, stopped a joyous moment occurring. The fact is, we got to the right answer.
Absolutely, we did. And look, if I'm brutally honest, without wanting to be a smart aleck, basically, I turned to my colleague, Neil Moxley, in the press box and said he's offside. And basically, as soon as it happened, because I thought he'd gone too soon. And basically, sure enough, the replays and the VAR footage shows that it has. Listen, if you look at the official view, official picture of the lines, it shows that his foot is offside. And then basically, where do you want to draw those lines? To give it the benefit of the doubt? To give it kind of a little bit of room for margin? At what point, if you gave it 0.5 of a centimetre, right, then basically it came in at 0.55, are we going to then call for a little bit more room for error? You have to draw the exact line and then basically you have to change that. You can't then change it because emotion tells you we want an upset. We want, Coventry to complete their incredible comeback in extra time. Yes, it was a fairy tale. Yes, it sort of kind of probably would have made it the greatest FA Cup, semi-final of all time, I think, if Coventry had pulled that off. But football doesn't work like that. We set up VAR. And listen, I'll be honest here. I was a massive fan of VAR. I thought it was the right way to go. Has it played out how I wanted or how I thought it would? Absolutely not. It's not worked out well, I don't think. It's taken away the passion from the league. It's taken away the passion from games. I honestly, as soon as I thought that Wright had strayed offside, and I thought he had, I looked at the linesman, and I might be wrong here, but I thought he's going to put his flag up. And basically, I thought there was a little twitch and he was thinking about it, but then he didn't. And which was the right thing to do. But I guarantee you that basically if that had been, without VAR, the linesman would have put his flag up and it would have been offside anyway. That was just my feeling. And, I stand by that. So, who knows? Without VAR, we're not saying that the goal would have definitely stood anyway. So I think the likelihood is it would have been disallowed for offside because, believe it or not, referee and linesmen are pretty sharp and good at what they do. They really are. But basically, I just feel it's ridiculous. You can't suddenly change the guidelines and the rules and suddenly instigate, however many frames per second it is that might change your opinion or might change your decision. I mean, that's just a nonsense, really, when it suits you. You've got to go by a set, guideline, how we work it out, how we come to this conclusion. You can't then suddenly use pictures from someone's, you know, front room that suddenly makes it look as if it's been drawn over Wan-Bissaka's foot. I mean, it's just laughable. We wanted this, you know, we wanted it to work better. I firmly believe it will work better next season than semi-automated offsides, which, you know, is much more exact, is much more precise and comes to it much quicker as well. So I think that will be the answer. But I'm sorry, it's not worked out well. It's not run as smoothly as the light. I think that's partly because of the officials running it. I've said many times before, I don't think it's a very good generation of officials. I think we've got some good ones. I think we've got some pretty average ones as well. And ultimately, VAR is only as good as the humans running it, to be honest. And, you know, they're not quite good enough. But did they make a mistake yesterday on the offside? No, they didn't.
Of course, it's not going to be the last time that we talk about VAR on this podcast this morning, but that will rear its head again in a section to come a little bit later on. John, one thing though, we'll talk about the Manchester City winning the other semi-final in just a second, but one thing to kind of talk about and the news leading up to the FA Cup semi-finals this week is the fact about replays. And of course, going back years and years, we would have had a semi-final replay from commentary against Manchester United. Of course, you know, semi-final replays were scrapped years and years ago, but now all replays in general are being scrapped across the FA Cup from the first round onwards as well. I know, John, that you love the FA Cup. You love the third round of the FA Cup in particular, third round weekends. For anyone who's listened to the podcast before, will know that that's one of John's favourite times of the year. You don't know, you know, the kind of the stories that might, you know, unfold, and, you know, replays as well have always been a big part of that. What are your thoughts on this decision? You know, for me, I could kind of, I kind of get why the bigger teams, and it kind of feels like it is, you know, kind of almost like that they've made this decision by themselves because they're seeing their game getting impacted, or sorry, their schedule is getting impacted by more and more games, and something had to give somewhere. Unfortunately, it's been the FA Cup. There has to be things in place to ensure that the money that they're going to benefit from playing all these, you know, more European games is now trickled down into it. And, you know, talk about whether or not the smaller sides will then get the opportunity if they draw a bigger team to go away to them as well, to kind of ensure that they still get those big paydays. I kind of feel like we were getting to a stage in football where something had to give, and unfortunately it's the FA Cup replays, and it is sad you will lose some bits of tradition, but it's just the way that the game's going. What are your kind of thoughts on it?
Yeah, I do think it's that last week was fascinating really to watch it play out, because honestly, anyone that has followed this remotely will know that it's as a direct consequence, or the timing of the scrapping of the replays is a direct consequence of the new look Champions League. Now, how long has that been in place? That's been in place for more than a year. Basically, known it's coming, basically. So, you know, I remember going to a dinner at the end of last season, and it was just, I was talking about it with someone from the FA as if it was a fait accompli. You know, basically, replays were definitely going to be scrapped. It's been, you know, in the calendar for a long, long time. It's not, you know, it shouldn't be news. And therefore, I do question how comes it's come to this, whereby basically people are sort of saying, well, we haven't been consulted, we haven't had the necessary conversations. Well, I don't know why that hasn't been instigated, but perhaps, you know, the other people have got to ask why they've not instigated it, and why it's been suddenly dropped on their toes. It was quite interesting, wasn't it? One of the angriest EFL clubs, and there were many, was Steve Kavanagh from Millwall, saying that, you know, the accusation being that basically they've got four EFL representatives, three clubs on the professional game board, and they're basically, so therefore the EFL was consulted, and Steve Kavanagh was, you know, from Millwall, was one of those representatives, and making the point, well, it was presented to us that replays were being scrapped. It was done and dusted, so we didn't really have a say. So much for, you know, for having our opinion. It was too late, basically. So, you know, I do, when it was made official last Thursday, you know, it shouldn't have been a surprise to anyone, frankly. But I guess when it's in black and white and it suddenly drops, it's you know, you're confirming people's worst fears. I personally love the FA Cup, you know, so much. And I think actually scrapping of the replays from semi-final, quarter-final, fifth round has almost given it a new dimension. In that basically teams have to go for it. They want to win it. They don't want it to go to penalties. you know, look, Ned, of all the games this year from fifth round onwards, who went to penalties? Quiz question for you.
Would I be right in saying it was just the semi-final at this point? Is this the trick question?
Nearly did, didn't it? But basically, you know, so it didn't go. The only one to have gone to penalties was Blackburn Newcastle, if you remember. I'd forgotten that one, and I had to look it up myself. But, you know, we talk about as if it's like, you know, the scrapping of the replays is the end of the world. But the frankly, I think scrapping of the replays, you know, actually changes a team's attitude so they go for it more. So I actually think you'll see a drastic, you know, drop off in replays. I think that the third and fourth round replays are a little bit more special because you can get the David and Goliath, you know, matchups, you know, which is great. Do we need to then have a little wider look? And maybe give the sort of kind of the smaller teams the option of playing at home or away for the payday, something like that. You know, just think, have a thought. You know, we cannot live off Hereford against Newcastle forever. And basically, you know, if that happened 50 years ago, I actually think that's your strongest argument for scrapping the replays. Because if you're talking about one game in 50 years, then I'm sorry, that's not a very, in my view, it's not a very good argument. Where I have a great deal of sympathy with the smaller clubs is the financial aspect. And I think then that basically, you know, it's not fair to scrap them and then not think about compensation. The FA will point to more money for grassroots, which is fine. But I think also, what about the EFL? You've got to look after those clubs. That, for me, is the bigger thing than the football aspect. And I think that's where it's come up short. I don't like the FA Cup final played before the end of the season. In my view, that tradition, English football tradition, dictates that it should be the final game of the domestic season. It won't be. So, all the, you know, the certain bits that I really don't mind and sort of kind of you move on, the certain bits that I really think, you know, they should be thinking about, i.e. the compensation, and certain bits that I really don't like. But, you know, you've got to have those kind of considerations. I don't think clearly that probably enough consultation was made. But in retrospect, but I just feel as if, let's not get stuck in the past, you know. People sort of kind of complain about the FA Cup being out old-fashioned. Well, I tell you what, if clubs or fans don't care about it anymore, it's lost the magic of the FA Cup. Well, you could have fooled me, because last week the debate around it, you know, absolutely reached boiling point, didn't it? So, you know, I think that's, you know, it was sort of fascinating to see, really. And, you know, I just thought that's how much people love and respect the FA Cup, because they got so wound up about it last week, which is good.
Just finally on the FA Cup and the semi-finals and everything else to go with it, Pep Guardiola, after Manchester City's win on Saturday against Chelsea, I suppose it's kind of quite, you know, timely, these comments, really, where he's having a big moan up about the schedule and the fact that Manchester City played 120 minutes and then they were playing another cup final as well. Could have even gone to 120 minutes of penalties again were it not for Bernardo's late goal for Manchester City. Does he have a point, or does it seem a little bit out of, you know, given what had gone before it in this news cycle this week, you know, 2 days before, scrapping of replays, the schedule was tight, it becomes a little bit not as tight as it potentially could have been. Of course, this is being done in response to, as you said there, the new Champions League format, extra group games that are occurring in January as well. But did it seem kind of a little bit, I don't know, you know, kind of the wrong timing for him to voice it, at least given, obviously, as we said there, what had come 2 days before and the scrapping of replays?
Yeah, I you know, the timing wasn't great, but I've got a great deal of sympathy with Guardiola, I have to say, because I think in his mind, he must have thought, blimey, you know, we've got Real Madrid on the Wednesday and then the FA Cup final on the Saturday. I just do not understand why City couldn't have played on the Sunday to give him an extra breathing space. And indeed the same for Arsenal, you know. I just, you know, if they're a game with Chelsea that has to be shifted, then so be it. But I do feel particularly bad for City, because, you know, the FA Cup semi-final, I just thought, I mean, blimey, having that on Saturday. We just don't respect our teams in Europe, I don't think, in the Champions League, and give them the best chance of success. And we're going to pay for it, I think, because if you look at it, we've not performed well, I don't think, in European competition. That is likely to cost English teams a Premier League, a fifth Champions League place, because of underperforming. There's no doubt about it. You know, it's had a knock-on effect this year, because, it's a long time since we've not had a team in the semi-finals of the Champions League or the Europa League. And I think that's as a direct consequence of the demands of the Premier League, the intensity of it, But then also, if you look time and again, Germany will shift games for Bayern Munich to help them succeed. You know, Italy the same, Spain the same. It's just obvious, and we'd never think ahead. Look at Liverpool's schedule this week. You know, the week they're going to have after Atalanta. It's just crazy. Four away games in 10 days, and basically, you know, as luck would have it, they go out of the Europa League, so they could have played the Everton game another, you know, in another midweek. Really, they were struggling to kind of squeeze it in. Well, you know, is that really doing the best we can for the English teams and giving them the best chance? And I think that's where Guardiola must think, you know, it comes from a situation in the past in Germany where he's managed, or you know, Spain, where he's managed and played and thought, they help us a lot more than the Premier League helps us English teams. You know, I just don't understand it. Can people not realise that basically the damage that has been done to the Premier League by losing that fifth place? And it's pretty certain that that will happen now. But it's crazy that, you know, we're still not sorting out fixtures to give teams the best chance. And I do think, you know, do worry about the players. Listen, fans will always come back, and it's a fair point, saying what about the pre-season tours? What about mid-season breaks and sort of kind of commercial activities? And that's very fair. But I think at this business end of the season, when it's all on the players, and when you're up against it, I think the number of games is too much. The demands, the lack of break between games, and the scheduling just must drive the clubs absolutely crazy. And all sympathy, frankly, with the players.
Moving on to the Premier League now. We're just going to talk briefly about the weekend's actions before looking ahead to the midweek games as well. A very packed midweek schedule because, of course, we've got games to try and fit in, as John said there, between now and the end of the campaign. And, John, we're going to talk about perhaps not so much... Well, a byproduct of it is that we will end up talking inevitably about a bit of action. But the biggest talking point from the weekend happens to be on social media. A statement issued by Nottingham Forest after their 2-0 defeat to Everton. They were livid with the non-awarding of a few penalties for them. Very disappointed. So they took to social media. And if you've not seen the post yet, you've probably been under a rock. I think everyone's seen it by now. But if you haven't, for purposes, I'll read it out on there now. Nottingham Forest posted, 3 extremely poor decisions, 3 penalties not given, which we simply cannot accept. We warned the PGMOL that the VAR is a Luton fan before the game, but they didn't change him. Our patience has been tested multiple times. NFFC will now consider its options. John, I mean, you know, calling it the nuclear option is probably even then underselling it, but it was, I mean, it's wild, it seems unprofessional. What are the potential ramifications that Nottingham Forest could face? The FA have already announced that they are launching an investigation into it, as you would firmly expect, but what kind of punishment could Nottingham Forest expect for this?
Well, I do think the FA will have to take action about it, really. I do feel as if you just can't do that. And I also think that the club statement route is just embarrassing, really. I hate it. I think it's become a new phenomenon. And now, you know, the clubs that sort of started it should feel a bit embarrassed, and they should feel shoulder some of the blame themselves, really. Liverpool, you know, with their statement, which I guess was more understandable than some, frankly, because they had genuinely been wronged. You know, there's no point of order, there's no debate, it's not a subjective decision. It was a mistake. I still didn't like it, if I'm honest. And then I just thought Arsenal's club statement, you know, after Newcastle, I mean, it was just embarrassing, absolutely ridiculous. So I do think clubs must take a bit of a share of the blame on this one. You know, do I think officials are great at the moment? No, I don't. I don't think the officials are sort of kind of, it's certainly not a classic generation. It's just, you know, it's a very, I think it's a poor group overall, if I'm brutally honest. I think there's some good ones, but I just feel that, you know, Forest really, time and again, they are getting themselves in bother and embarrassing themselves. Over the 3 penalty shouts, I think the last one, when, you know, the sliding tackle comes in from behind, is the one that's the Stonewall one. I think the others are debatable, but I think the last one, you know, is just absurd. I can't believe it's not given. But should that prompt a club statement? No, it absolutely shouldn't. You know, I think it's embarrassing. I think it's a poor reflection on the football club, who've got such a great history and tradition. You know, they're selling themselves, frankly. They're embarrassing themselves. It's a horrendous look for Nottingham Forest. And I think Forest fans should be equally embarrassed. Of course they're going to be angry. Of course they're going to be passionate and behind their team and their players. But I just think it's wrong, and we shouldn't go down that route. The Mark Clattenburg thing is just also just shocking. I mean, honestly, you know, the guy used to be one of our most outstanding referees, brilliant official, and it feels like to me he sold his soul. I mean, I just can't believe that he's doing this, and basically, he's. I don't know. You've got a question: is why he's doing this? You know, whether he's got an agenda there to speak out against former colleagues like this is just crazy. I just think it's so wrong. It's embarrassing on all levels, frankly.
Yeah, just on those Mark Clattenburg comments. After the initial statement from Nottingham Forest, Gary Neville was on Sky Sports saying that Mark Clattenburg should resign from his position with Nottingham Forest. Obviously, you know, what is it, referees coach or something bizarrely termed, anything like that. Anyway, he's consulted them about referees at Nottingham Forest. It seemed strange at the time when the appointment was done. And now it kind of felt after that, you know, statement where they are calling out, as you said there, you know, Mark Clattenburg used to be a referee, was a referee not very long ago. And they're calling out his colleagues, his ex-colleagues, you know, probably friends as well, guys that he knows quite well. And you'd expect then that he would, you know, you almost stand up for him. You'd almost want him to stand up for him, you know, and kind of say that, you know, this is wrong, and kind of rail against what that statement from Forest. And instead, he's gone the other way and he's doubled down really on their comments on Monday morning. And yeah, it's a really, really odd situation just all around, isn't it? And for Forest as well, they probably thought that this statement might have created a siege mentality. But if you look at Nico Williams' interview after the match, for me, it felt like they're kind of now just woe is me instead, rather than, you know, kind of, you know, all right, we've got something to fight against. Let's just stay up. Let's give it everything. They kind of feel like, no, the world is against us. The world is against us. We'll never get a penalty ever again. And it kind of feels like it's going the wrong way of the players, that they're not having the right mentality for this relegation fight.
Yeah, I agree with that. I do think it's sort of having a really negative impact. And basically, you know, time and again, they're finding themselves in trouble. Time and again, it's the kind of the blame culture. You know, at what stage are you going to sort of say, well, we didn't defend that very well? You know, or could the keeper have done better on the long shot in the first goal? I mean, you know, is the referee to blame on that as well? I mean, I just think it's wrong. If you're going into a game with mentality like that, you're going to lose. The other thing that I really hated about the statement, by the way, is the kind of, we raised the fact that the VAR is a Luton fan. By the way, I don't know whether he is a Luton fan, but basically, you know, I mean, who does a Luton fan, by the way, want to win out of that game? I don't know that he particularly wants either, you know, set team to win, but to really kind of question someone's professional attitude like that is really offensive. I think that, you know, we do see a situation whereby, you know, the referee, you know, isn't going to be selected if it's well known that basically he's a Newcastle fan, or he's a, you know, Liverpool fan or whatever. But I do think that clubs generally, I heard Rob Earnshaw on the radio this morning talking about how it's never been a thing to basically where the referee comes from. I'm not sure I agree with that. I think amongst managers, not necessarily amongst players, but I think amongst managers and backroom staff, they're obsessed with the referee and the officials in a way these days that they perhaps weren't, you know, in the past, but they are. They do think about, you know, that guy, where does he come from? You know, what's his accent? Basically, you know, why is he in charge of this one? Has he got any bias against us? I think they're obsessed with it. You know, in fact, I know they are. You know, this club doesn't want that particular VAR because he's given some bad VAR calls against us in the past. That guy comes from that area and that person, you know, speaks with that accent. I'm sorry, but that's what they talk about. And I just think it's, you know, it's, I don't know, it's a strange world where I think everyone on TV now has to have a team. You know, is encouraged to kind of be a cheerleader for that team and call them and us. And I just hate it. I think it's wrong. But I think that's the world we're getting into, really. And I just think that, you know, to question a referee's integrity like that, I think is really offensive, because honestly, they could make mistakes. And I do think, as I say, that they've made a mistake on, particularly on that third penalty appeal. But I don't think they've done it out of bias or spite. I really don't.
And we're all talking about how we need to show more respect towards referees. And then things like this just kind of really don't help the narrative there at all, do they? They, you know, kind of, it really kind of almost get fans wound up and riled up against referees as well. So it's not helping anyone anywhere at any time.
You know, I think you can be constructive with your criticism, but don't be offensive with it. You know, that's the point, I think, that basically, you know, you're allowed to have an opinion and you're allowed to have a view. And this goes for, you know, fans as well as kind of, you know, managers. But just don't cross a line, because these guys have got a pretty thankless jobs. And sometimes I do think they've got it wrong. And, you know, I can understand why a manager loses the plot, basically. But, you know, because if you're in that pressure situation, but I'm not really excusing it. I just think I can probably understand it.
Moving the attention now, though, onto the Premier League's midweek fixtures. And we do have plenty of rescheduled games coming up this week as well, and fairly sizable games as well, John. Arsenal and Liverpool were both in action at the weekend in the Premier League, whilst Manchester City were in the FA Cup. Wins for both of them, getting back on the winning trail. Arsenal back on top now as well as a result of it. And we're going to talk about the Arsenal game first, and we'll come on to Liverpool, and then we'll come on to Manchester City. Hopefully we'll cram them in before we're out of time this morning. But for Arsenal, an opportunity at least to kind of build some momentum for them after a difficult week, you know, probably a difficult 10 days actually leading into it, from that first leg against Bayern Munich up until that win against Wolves. A difficult testing period, questions about their mentality as well, whether or not they were like the Arsenal of old, where, you know, kind of the season kind of unraveled in April, and we're seeing that again. But they answered, I think, maybe some of those questions about their mentality against Wolves with goals late on in both halves, that they kept fighting, kept going right until the end, and they got the win that they needed to take them back to the top.
Yeah, they did, Ned. I thought it was really, you know, a really good performance, battling, brave performance, wasn't it, at Wolves? They certainly, you know, sort of had to dig deep physically and mentally, I thought, at Wolves, because it was just so soon after that sort of kind of devastating blow. And I think that's a test of their mettle. You know, Wolves were a bit under strength, weren't they? They were missing players and what have you. And Arsenal really, you know, in the first half, perhaps didn't, you know, sort of kind of, you know, reach their sort of levels. But I do think they controlled it quite well overall. And then Declan Rice sort of kind of really put his foot on the gas. But my God, they've got to dig deep again, because to beat then Chelsea does apply some pressure, because it could potentially take them five clear, I think, from Man City. Man City then basically before their next game, and they've got then two games in hand, obviously, one of which is on Brighton on Thursday night. And basically they've suddenly got to navigate, you know, that. It's the same for Liverpool, really. You know, I think Liverpool, you know, sort of that is a big win for them at Fulham. Hard place to go. And a Sunday after a European trip, I think it's testing. And I think of all the teams, you know, all the rescheduling, as I say, I think Liverpool have got the hardest one, because honestly, you know, it's really difficult for them, because they've got the passion of a Merseyside derby, and then away to West Ham on the Saturday lunchtime. I mean, that's brutal, absolutely brutal. You know, it wouldn't be allowed if it was in European competition. So, you know, again, I can't quite understand why we're doing this to two teams, really. But it's, at least it makes it really interesting and exciting. And basically, you know, the really big test, I think Arsenal, you know, on Tuesday night, it's the physical aspect as much as anything. You know, they've got to lift themselves again to play Chelsea. And I think that Chelsea, you know, played really well in the semi-final, very unlucky to lose. And I think they'll come to the Emirates thinking, you know, they're meeting Arsenal at not their greatest time of the season, and maybe they could nick something at the Emirates.
Yeah, you said they're about Liverpool and the run that they're facing. I suppose their midweek game, I mean, they are still playing in their home city, and it's just across Stanley Park. So for them, it might just feel like a home match against Everton this week. You know, the lack of travel, at least, anyway, and they'll probably prepare for it the same way if they were playing at Anfield on the Wednesday night instead. But again, that's it, and that's this test at this stage in the season. You said for Arsenal, it's a physical test. For Liverpool as well, as you said there, you know, to go to away to Atalanta last Thursday, to go away to London on Sunday, then to, you know, play away in, you know, admittedly still in your same city and just over a park away as well, but still away from home. You've not got the support. That will test you mentally. And then back down to London again this weekend for a 12:30 kickoff. And I'm sure Jurgen Klopp will be delighted about that and won't mention it at all in his press conference ahead of the game against West Ham. I'm sure he'll be very well behaved and won't say that at all. But it is that test for Liverpool. And it's more of a test now as well, isn't it? You know, their fans and Everton fans were probably after that 6-0 against Chelsea last Monday. Liverpool fans were hoping that game couldn't come quick enough. Everton fans were probably fearing the worst. But now they've got this morale boosting win over Nottingham Forest under their belts, pulling themselves further clear of trouble as well. And it kind of feels like it's maybe changed a little bit, perhaps, for Everton, that they will have a little bit of wind in their sails now after the win at the weekend.
Yeah, I do think Everton can go with a bit of belief. And listen, you know, I hate to delve into the cliches here, but the derby is always a great leveler, isn't it? And basically, Everton, I'm sure, would love nothing more than to spike Liverpool's guns. It's Klopp's last Merseyside derby at Goodison. So basically, can you imagine the sort of the passion and sort of how much they'd love to kind of, you know, upset Liverpool's title charge, really. I think the Liverpool have got the biggest thing is worrying about one game to the next. Basically, how do they approach it? Can you go to the same 11 players on Wednesday night to Saturday lunchtime? I think between the two games, you'll have to make changes, Jurgen Klopp. And I think that could be a big aspect as well. Everton do seem to have a little bit of confidence growing. You know, you basically saw Pickford's amazing saves. Well, a few weeks ago, would Pickford be doing that? And then basically celebrating with the fans who bang on side with him. You know, he's a player who gives absolutely everything for the badge and for the shirt. And I just thought that his sort of celebrations epitomised where Everton are a little bit, really. They're basically just recovering a bit of confidence and belief and suddenly thinking, actually, we can do this. And, you know, they won't be lacking any kind of passion, ferocity, snapping into tackles, getting at Liverpool and really making it difficult for them. So I do actually think this is quite a big test for Liverpool. And I do think that probably the manager and some of the players will be thinking, oh, we've got that trip to London. You know, it's going to play on their minds. I do think it's wrong.
One thing, though, that Liverpool do have is a little bit of, I don't know if it's as much of an advantage here, but I'm going to try and cling to it as an advantage. Give me a nice little segue into this game as well, is that they are playing before Manchester City. Arsenal are playing before Manchester City. Man City are a point back from the pair of them, having not played at the weekend, going into this round of midweek fixtures. They don't play until Thursday, isn't it, up against Brighton. So again, that gap could grow further still by the time that they get to kickoff. And it's something that we've spoken about recently on previous episodes of Football Digest, and it's something that we're going to speak about between now and the end of the campaign as well. And it's that psychological pressure that perhaps comes with going second in the title race. In some instances, it might work. Arsenal, I thought it would have worked in their favour the other week against Aston Villa. Going into that game, having started that weekend top of the table, that's exactly what they needed to do. For Man City, it's a case of we have to win this game to keep pace, and we're still behind them. It's not a case of we'll go above them. They still have that kind of, for me, that psychological blow, perhaps a little bit of, and we've still got work to do. We've won our game, we've kept pace, and we've still got to go a bit more to get above them again. And I wonder, well, I mean, you never kind of wonder about the mental resilience of this Manchester City side. They are, you know, a beast. And when it comes to this stage of the season, winning games is almost a formality for them, isn't it? They just seem to rack them up. But it is going to put that pressure on them this time, isn't it? That by going last, by already being a point back, yes, they've got games in hand on them, but it kind of increases the pressure on that game against Brighton. And it'll be a tough game for them as well, going away on a Thursday night and then having to kind of refresh and go again at the weekend.
Yeah, I think if the other two teams keep their end of the bargain and keep winning, then I do think it applies some pressure. It's interesting you raised the Villa game, because I thought when I was at Arsenal that day, and then basically when Liverpool lost, it genuinely felt like I could feel a bit of extra pressure added to Arsenal's shoulders. And as a result, I thought they felt it and didn't play at their best. And I think it genuinely affected them. So I think, you know, we shouldn't underestimate the kind of psychological effects of results and little, you know, twists and turns in the title race. Where I think is different for Man City is they just have that experience. They're able to handle it. On Saturday in the FA Cup semi-final, for example, they didn't play well, but they basically stuck to the task and thought we were on to stay in the game, you know, and basically, you know, a chance will come. They didn't panic. They didn't open up. They didn't turn it into a kind of end-to-end game. They thought we're going to stay the course and we'll get a chance. And that is the difference, I think, in a Guardiola team with experience of winning trophies and sort of kind of the teams that are sort of kind of coming up on the rails and trying to, you know, match them in title races and so on. They don't panic. You know, they don't go all out for the win thinking we've got to, you know, they just don't lose. They don't throw it away. And then the chance will come. And I think that that was the difference in experience. And that's why I think City will be champions and will probably finish with a perfect winning run to the end of the season. I genuinely think they can win all their games. Brighton stands out. Tottenham away stands out. So I think those are the two games that they're basically. The rest, I think that City surely will get maximum points. But I think then that basically those are the two games where I think City could yet slip. And they're very, you know, difficult games, those two. But I think, you know, really, when City are in the groove and when City have kind of got the title metal between their teeth, they generally come through. And that's why I think that's what sets them apart from the others. They've just got this mentality that makes them believe we're going to do it. We're going to win all our games. We're going to see it through.
A bumper week of Premier League action to come, a bumper episode just for it as well. John, really appreciate your time as always. And of course, you can keep up to date with all the latest from the Premier League around the games this midweek and looking ahead to the weekend across the Daily Mirror, Daily Star and Daily Express websites. Of course, we will be back on Thursday as well to look ahead to the weekend's Premier League action. But for now, it's goodbye.